You are listening to Lunchtime Live here on News Talk with Ciara. We are talking about fertility, as you are probably aware. We've discussed it all this week. We talked about fertility treatment on Monday. We talked about miscarriage on Tuesday. And yesterday we talked about the pain of involuntary childlessness. And I think you may have noticed that across the board, really, apart from one or two exceptions, the voices we heard were women's voices. And I do think that women struggle with this inordinately, and I don't doubt that for a moment. But there are men involved too, many of whom struggle with issues around wanting to be a parent as well, wanting to be a father, a dad, and it not happening for them, or being a very difficult road for them, or indeed watching, you know, their partner going in and out of hospital for treatments and all of those things. And I think that it's really important we hear men's voices in this. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
I woke up in the middle of the night, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and Lisa was gone from the bed, and I heard the shower, and I just looked at the bed next to me, and there was blood, and I went into the bathroom, and she was in the shower. She was actually more calm than I would have expected.
Yeah.
What?
God, that's horrific though, for the two of you.
Yeah, what kind of got me was, when I went into the bathroom, on the floor, you could see the sack, if that makes sense. You could actually see it. And I didn't know what to do. So I kind of scooped up the blood and stuff on the floor and cleaned it up. And you don't realize what you're doing at the time. You're just kind of cleaning up a mess and you're trying to make it easier. Then you realize that you've disposed of what would have been, if you know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying.
Yeah. And you just kind of threw it away without thinking in the moment. Does that make sense? Now, my sister-in-law was actually pregnant at exactly the same time. And she would have been exactly the same time frame as my wife. So we went over to visit when the baby was born. And like, as soon as the baby was put in Lisa's arm, she's just started crying. Because it would have been exactly that age.
Of course.
So there is kind of, you know, and as, you know, when that happened the second time, there is like, it was my wife's pain and my wife's suffering. And I was just kind of there to make sure she was okay. And I was there to make sure that.
Tony, you were traumatized too, though. I can hear it in your voice. And of course you would be.
There was probably an element of that. But like you said, it's, because it was so early, you don't tell people before 3 months.
Yeah.
So nobody knew. So it was kind of me and the wife, and that's it. Nobody else knew. And which means nobody talked about it but each other. But you don't want to talk to each other about it, because then you're bringing it back up again.
Yeah.
And you're just making it worse. And you kind of get into the cycle, because you don't want to talk about it because it upsets her. She doesn't want to talk about it in case it upsets you and no one talks about it.
And does that make it really hard to process it then?
I think when we went over to visit my niece then, I think that was probably harder, because we hadn't really, you know, processed it. But in March, my dad died. And my dad, and everybody's going to say this, everybody in Ireland will say this, my dad was a legend. I could talk to him about anything.
Yeah.
And he had
dads are legends, 100%. In fairness.
Yeah. But he was fantastic. And I noticed he was very ill. He was in palliative care for about 2 weeks before he died. So we kind of knew it was going, but we didn't know when. But I noticed Lisa was very upset. Like, especially in the last couple of days, she was very upset. And As the actual kids, me and my brother and sister, we were kind of more, I don't know if this makes sense, but we were more focused on what needed to be done. Same as my ma. Okay, we got to plan the funeral, and we got to plan the wake, and we've got to get this done, we need to get these photos, we need to get this video. And you're kind of kept busy. But I don't know if this was very upset, and I couldn't figure out why. And it didn't occur to me, because I'm an idiot. And the day after the funeral and the wake, she told me she was pregnant and she had been spotting the last few days.
So she didn't want to tell you because you were going through the funeral?
So she was going through that on her own. So I immediately felt guilty because she was going through that on her own.
Now, you're very welcome back. We've been talking about men's journey through fertility today on the programme, and loads of emails coming in. Says, hi, Ciara. Listening to the wonderful show and the powerful testimonies. As a man who will not get to be a dad, I found it difficult listening. Lots of factors led me not to being a dad. Bad luck, illness, work stress, and assuming there was always going to be more time. But now that time has run out, the pain is every bit as real for me, and I kind of assume it's the same for other men. In a lot of ways, I think it's worse. Male difficulty talking about our emotions is yet again holding us back. I am resigned to my loss of parenthood and have wonderful nephews and nieces that are both a joy and a sharp, painful reminder, but the pain never goes away, and some days are better than others. And another one that says, my wife and I tried IVF, Ciara, for a number of years, and unfortunately it didn't work for us. After the fifth go, my wife decided that was it. She had put her mind and her body through enough torture. As the male in the relationship, I wanted her to keep going, not fully understanding the mental or the physical stress it was putting on her. We had marriage issues after that, but sorted them out, thank God. My wife didn't want to adopt, so having a child wasn't going to happen for us. To be honest, for me, I would have loved to have adopted. I would love to be a dad. And as a couple, people always tell us we would make great parents. Sometimes if something comes on the TV where you see a proud mum and dad talking about the achievements of their child, it makes me cry. I don't bring this up with my wife, as the line has been drawn at this stage and I've come to accept that this is how it is. But some people forget that the man is in the relationship too, and it can be as devastating to him. Please keep up the good work and don't give out my name, which of course we won't. I'm going to have to take a break because it's nearly time for the news, but I'm so glad. I can't tell you how glad I am that we are doing this. Lots more from men on this after this on Lunchtime Live. And Gavin is on the line. Gavin, you were told you couldn't have children.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Actually, it's very interesting that you mentioned Westport. I'm married to a Mayo woman, and I was actually, you know, I would have spent my life trying not to get girls pregnant, and you know, very careful with contraception, yeah, and all that. But I remember that I was down on a beach in Mayo with my wife and her sister and her children, two little girls that were kind of 3 and 2, and I was holding their hands, walking along a beach, kicking over stones and showing them all the creepy crawlies underneath, and they were fascinated. And it was at that point that I realized that I wanted to be a father, you know, and got married. And you know, you stop using contraception and you're playing a little bit of Russian roulette. You're not actively trying, but you're not trying. And then as time goes on, you're trying more earnestly.
Yeah.
My wife started to suspect there was something up. She went to her gynecologist and got some tests done. And he said, look, you're grand. I need to see your husband. So I was given a letter to go and get a semen analysis done at the Coombe.
Yeah.
And you're one of your previous... callers just mentioned it. You walk into the Coombe, there's a little lab with a little hash. They give you an analysis, a little jar. And I go, where do you go? And they went, find a toilet. The public male toilet in the Coombe is beside the reception. And it's got one toilet cubicle and 2 urinals. And off you go. And you're, you know, trying to be as quiet as you can. There's somebody right outside wanting to go in and use, you know. So I handed the jar back in. I was told... I said, look, how long does this take? It doesn't take you 20 minutes just to eyeball it. So I said, oh, granted, the results will be soon. So never heard anything from my wife's gynecologist. She used to ring me back and rang the office and said, no, you're going to have to wait for an appointment. And I go, listen, this takes 20 minutes. It's an eyeball. Why do I need to wait in front? I want to talk to him. You know, now. So he rang me back and he told me that I had 1% fertility, that 90% of them were immotile, and I had absolutely no chance of conceiving on my own. And that we had to start doing IVF, and we were going to have to start to do ICSI IVF, which is an expensive form of it. So we went to claim to Dr. Shamoon, an Egyptian doctor, a lovely man. And, you know, we said about the process. He confirmed that my count was very low and that I had to do ICSI. And we were given a prescription to go to get the drugs. And because even though it was me that's infertile, it was my wife that had to go through the whole process of creating eggs, harvesting the eggs and the IVF. So my wife had to do the heavy lifting.
That probably was a difficult headspace for you to be in then, was it?
One of your previous callers talked about being shell-shocked. And I was shell-shocked. And my wife was distraught. She is fantastic with children. who's a great mother now. Things were good for us. But she was distraught. We just thought it wasn't going to happen for us. And there was times where all around us, our circle of friends were having children. And I remember once being at a dinner in a friend's house, and there was a few couples there, and one of them announced that they had news. And obviously we were delighted for them, but I could see my wife really, really struggling to keep it in, you know, because we were just told that we couldn't have kids. And that aspect was hard. But we put the head down. We just saw this as a job. We were planning to move down the country. We put off moving down the country. We were self-employed. We had to take on staff that could cover us so we could be leaving and doing all this stuff. And we went to our prescription. We were like kids skipping out of a sweet shop with our syringes and our meds and all that. We were really excited. And we have a very good marriage. This made us even more close. We really leant on each other. The biggest problem we had with the injections was we'd get into fits of giggles. And it's very hard to inject somebody who's laughing. I became very good at giving injections to the extent on a couple of occasions my wife didn't know I'd even given her an injection.
Fair play to you, because I've given a few myself, and that's quite hard to do.
When you're laughing and they're laughing, it's very hard. But we made a bit of a mistake, and the mistake was we didn't contemplate failure. We were just convinced this was going to work, and we didn't go down the route of counselling. We didn't think we needed it, but we didn't prepare ourselves for failure, and that was a mistake. And of course, the initial part is to make your wife make eggs and then to harvest them. And she's going down getting scans every couple of weeks. And something happened in work. And we were going down for a scan and everything was okay. And then something happened in work. Somebody pulled a sickie and I had to cover. And my wife said, look, it's normally a routine scan. We'd be grand. And off she went. And she rang me inconsolable. They had put in the probe, the ultrasound, the nurse went white, and then she called the doctor went white, and she was in danger of suffering hyperovulation stimulation syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a panic. So for us, that was like somebody kicking the chair from under you. We just didn't contemplate that. It was a hard lesson to learn. And then they had to wait time to get my wife back into the normal cycle. You know, it's all careful and monitoring the cycle. So, and we, you know, had to go back to the ground, you know, the very start. So we changed our outlook. We decided that all we'll do is contemplate failure and anything else is a bonus.
Okay. And we
went down that route. And the first attempt for doing IVF with a woman, I would nearly call it a ranging shot, a zeroing shot. They don't know how she's going to respond to the hormones. And in the case of my wife, in the first attempt, she over-responded. So they have to get the dosage right. So they would have adjusted the dosage down. We have all these little syringes. You dial in the dose, and we'd adjust the dose. And next to them, everything went okay. And we had to go down for harvesting. And I'm in an ward. My wife is taken in to theatre. She's sedated. And I'm sitting there waiting. And next thing, she's wheeled into me. In a wheelchair, she's bleeding, she's tears running down her neck, she's crying that much, and the nurses lift her from the wheelchair into the bed, and I never felt as low in all my life, because this was my fault.
It was nobody's fault. Now, you're welcome back. We are talking about men's stories around fertility problems and how they never seem to be aired, to be fair. Someone says, Ciara, I don't want to come on, but I can relate to everything many of your callers have gone through. Both of us have had difficulties. I nearly lost the love of my life. She hyperstimulated. She went into organ failure. No family members were aware. I felt so low with ICSI and IVF, neither of which worked. We went down the long, long road of adoption, but thankfully we now have two beautiful adoptive children. Well, that's good to hear. And someone else says, hi, Ciara, well done on the show. Listening today is heartbreaking. We have literally gone through so many of these issues. IUI, IVF, IVF in Spain, hyperovarian stimulation, counselling, not contemplating failure, miscarriage, a DNC, issues on both sides, and the list goes on. It is really dreadful in so many ways, and there is very little support in Ireland. I think that's true. I think we're hearing that over and over again. And Andy is on the line. Andy, tell me why you got in touch.
We've been through a very similar circumstances as all the other guys have been talking. Me and my wife have suffered 4 miscarriages.
That's pretty hard. Four and no children?
No, we have 4 children.
We have 4 children. That's good.
Yeah. It is good. My wife got pregnant when she was only 19, and we had a baby, and that was grand. And we decided to have more children, and she miscarried the second baby, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
And it was a miscarriage. So we went up for our first scan, everything was perfect, baby was growing. Went up for the second scan, and the radiologist, she just was just like, no heartbeat. And me and my wife were just like, what? And she goes, I have to go get an expert. And she went out of the room, and she came back in with somebody else, with another nurse. And the nurse was trying to scan my wife, and they were like, oh, we can't find a heartbeat. And it started doing internal scans and everything. And, oh, no, there's no heartbeat. The baby's dead. And they took us out and put us in this little room and left us for like nearly an hour. And me and my wife ended up just walking out of the hospital. So we did. And then they rang back and were like, oh, you need a DNC. And they booked her in. So we came back up on the Monday, and she got the DNC. But like, the wheels are down, and I was just left. There was nowhere for me to go. You know, I kind of went down to the canteen in Hollis Street, and I couldn't stay there because there was people coming in and out with their newborn babies. Yeah.
How long ago was this?
That would have been in 2003, maybe. I can't quite remember the date.
Just seems to be, no disrespect, badly handled.
It was terrible. It was just the way it was. And then we decided that we would try again because we had a miscarriage, and we had a son then.
Okay.
And then later on we said, well, we'll have a third one, you know, we'll go again. And then we had three miscarriages back to back. One was horrific. They said, no, there's no heartbeat. We're bringing for DNC. This was a Friday. Or was it a Friday? No, it was a Thursday. And they couldn't bring us in until the Monday. And my wife miscarried on the Friday, and we had to end up getting an ambulance. She almost bled to death.
My word.
And
going through all of that, was it very hard to like cope with it? Was it very hard to talk about it? Did you talk about it to each other? Could you talk about it outside your relationship?
We talked about it a little bit, but I didn't talk to her because I didn't want her to feel that, you know, I was struggling, or she needed to kind of emotionally look after me, because, you know, as men, we're not really creating our emotions sometimes. But I didn't want to talk to her about it because I didn't want to upset her. So we kind of just kept it silent for a long time.
So where did you get the support? Where did you get any support then?
None. No, she went on the website and found some pages and stuff, but there was nothing for me. I didn't even know where to look. I didn't even want to type anything in because I felt like, you know, you're just supposed to, as a man, at the first time around, as a man, you're just supposed to get on with it. You know, why are you upset for it? This didn't happen to you.
Yeah, but it did though.
It happened to me.
It happened to me
as much as happened to her. And she had to go through far worse, yes. But at the same time, when I was young, I had cancer, so I didn't even think I was going to have children, you know, so...
Yeah.
It's difficult, and nobody talks to you about it. And back then, the first time, like when I rang work to try and get an extra day off, they were like, "But this didn't happen to you. You have no excuse
really?
Not to work." Yeah. No, I don't work there anymore, and the new company I work for now, it was much better, and they were fully understanding and stuff like that.
I do think, and I've heard that said today, that Andy, that men almost feel like they shouldn't be upset. It's all about their wives, or they should, that it's selfish, or it's invalid in some way that they're going through it too. You are, I know you are.
Yeah, and it's difficult. And actually, I haven't really thought about it. And this conversation that you're having all week has really kind of made me think more about how much it actually affected me at the time.
Yeah, of course.
It wasn't easy. Like, you know, like I said, it kind of nearly broke me and my wife up. We didn't talk about it. We were walking on eggshells with each other. It was a difficult time.
Yeah.
And then she got, she went and we got tested, and I was fine and she was fine. It was, and the girls in the clinic were saying, we're just very, very unlucky to have three back to back like that. And they gave her some,
Yeah, I mean, obviously you were unlucky, but look, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think there's enough support, and I don't think it's reasonable or right or fair that men feel that they don't or shouldn't be able to express their pain around this. And thank you very much.